At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details. When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices. Plus, extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. And up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Welcome to the finale of Bronze Bears. My name's Jeff Berkus, and I wanted to create a special podcast series around the 2024 Hall of Fame class because it is such an interesting moment in Chicago Bears history. Steve McMichael is probably the last 85 Bear that's going to make it into the Hall of Fame. Although, as we discuss in this series, center Jay Hilgenberg and linebacker Wilbur Marshall definitely have a case that should be heard from the senior committee at some point. That's the last Super Bowl winning team in Chicago. That championship turns 40 years old next year. For many Bears fans that are my age or younger, this is essentially a history project when you look and think back about the 85 Bears. Devin Hester's selection adds a second Hall of Famer to the last Super Bowl team from Chicago, which is creeping up on a 20-year anniversary before we know it. As we discussed during this series, the current status of a Charles Peanut Tillman, Olin Krutz, or Lance Briggs to the Hall of Fame looks like it's not going to happen anytime soon, or if at all. There will be other players with a connection, a piece to Chicago that will be part of the Hall of Fame down the line. Khalil Mack has probably the strongest case of all of the players that are still active. But it was also this moment that really signified the start of something new in Chicago. That's the Caleb Williams era. And I know he didn't play in the Hall of Fame game, but you know he did warm up on the field. He was present. There was something important about that moment. Can he be the catalyst to the next great Bears team and return Navy and Orange to the big game? Can he be the focal point that drives sustained competitiveness in Chicago? Could he be the franchise quarterback that has evaded the Bears since before the merger? I thought about all of this as I drove 10 hours to Canton, Ohio, the birthplace of the NFL. It's a small town in Ohio. It's about as far away from that glitz and glitter of the NFL that I really experienced at the draft events in Kansas City last year and Detroit this year. I don't want to get too existential here, but as I watched silver-haired men put on their gold jackets and carry their bronze bus, I was struck by the juxtaposition of it all. Canton is the birthplace of the NFL, and it also serves as the final resting place for the memorialization of the best of the best. It's the gladiators of yesteryear, now without their helmet and shield, showing us a side of themselves, their humanity, that we otherwise never see. It's a league that has grown to be worth hundreds of billions of dollars, playing a game on a Thursday night in a stadium otherwise occupied by the local high school. At once something so relatable and something unimaginably unattainable right in front of you. So who comes to an event like a Hall of Fame induction ceremony? I met a lot of people. I chatted with a ton of people. And I'm going to get into all of that with Jack Silverstein here in a bit. But I wanted to share with you a conversation I had with Chester, who we dubbed Chester for Hester after I stopped recording. Here's that clip.
I am Chester Bryant from Newark, New Jersey. Live in Tampa, 40-year Bear fan.
Oh, 40-year Bear fan. All right, what are you here today? What are you wearing?
I am wearing an autographed signed Devin Hester jersey, and I'm here today to watch Devin Hester reveal his bust in the Canton.
What made Devin Hester special to you?
Because when you are a player in any sport, that they change the rules of that sport because of your ability or what you have produced in the sport, you're nothing but greatness.
Favorite memory of Devin?
Favorite memory, running the Super Bowl kickoff back.
Sure, absolutely. Do you remember Steve McMichael at all?
Absolutely. I was 10 years old, just became a Bear fan. Remember the Super Bowl shuffle? Funny story, I was also a WWF fan. Never knew that those two was my same Steve McMichael.
You didn't know they were the same?
I was a fan of wrestling. I was a fan. I knew he was on my team as a football. I never knew that was the same guy.
That's fantastic. That's fantastic. So what do you think it means for like two Chicago Bears plus Julius Peppers to be in the same class? Plus we have the Caleb Williams era starting. Do you feel like this is like a really pivotal, important year for the Bears?
Absolutely. This is the start of a new golden era. Ryan Poles said it profusely in videos that it's time to get rid of the past and it's time to start a new future. And as a guy that's been here for 40 years of this past, I'm so looking forward to the new future, and the best way to kick it off is to have some of the best in the business go in representing Bear football.
That's what it's all about. I recorded a few more conversations during the event, but as I went back and I listened to them all, I really felt like Chester captured everything about this event and what it means to fans in about 2 minutes. The rest of this episode is a conversation I recorded with Jack Silverstein about our experience at the Hall of Fame weekend. I wanted to give you all a little bit of a recap, a behind the scenes of what our week was like, and just give you some insight into what we were going through as we were trying to take this all in. So here's that conversation. All right, I'm here with Jack Silverstein, and we're going to talk a little bit about our shared experience at the Hall of Fame weekend, the Hall of Fame game, the Hall of Fame ceremony, and everything in between. Jack, we've been writing together for almost a decade. We've talked on the phone, we've texted, we've exchanged stories, we've given each other some insights into what direction we would go in different stories, and exchanged some stories of our own over the years. But the first time I actually got to meet you was at the Hall of Fame game. I think a very appropriate and fun meeting, getting you a ticket, sliding you a ticket across from security so that you could get in. It was a lot of fun to actually finally meet you in person.
Absolutely, buddy. I appreciated you picking up my press credential so I could swoop in on the back of a golf cart driven by neighborhood, not really security. I guess they sort of were. All the golf carts whipping around. So it was fun. Jumped in and you and I jumped right into it.
Yeah, absolutely. So it was actually my first time in a press box. And so I thought maybe we could just share our experience that we had individually and together at this event. It was very cool to be able to do this. And I think some people might just enjoy sort of the behind the scenes and what we were able to experience given our connection with the Hall of Fame. We've both have, some contacts in the Hall of Fame. We made sure very early on when we knew that what the class was going to look like that we could get in here and have a presence. And so we both made plans very early. I think I booked my hotel, 8 months in advance. I mean, like very long time ago. Like I had that hotel room booked a long time ago. But I think it might be just kind of fun for people to hear our shared experience and then some of our takeaways throughout this. So for me, that was my first time in a press box, which I think was actually pretty cool, but like also committed the number one sin of being a media person in the press box by letting out a little cheer for Khalil Herbert when he broke off that run, saying you kind of gave me an elbow and was like, you can't cheer. How was it being in a press box of a stadium that was right off of a highway that
the view was dope.
The local high school gets, plays in there. There's something interesting about that particular scene where, it's either like a really nice high school stadium, or like kind of the most quaint, professional stadium that you've ever seen in your life.
No, the view was fantastic, and that really is what made it different than other press boxes, was that surprise of the vista overlooking the stadium, and you had, you know, the angles of the highway, was that 77, going back out. So you've got this long angle. If you think of this as, you know, a huge movie screen, and there's like an angle going straight back, that was our view, because our seats were perched a little bit for visibility. The window was enormous. It looked dope, and it was a beautiful scene. I wish we had had more time to be able to walk around, which is really what I was going to do in the second half, but weather didn't afford it. But the press box view was great. It was big. It was clean. It was just that view overlooking the highway. It was stunning and a great atmosphere out there.
So I showed up pretty early, and like you said, I picked up your press credential. You were still driving. You got out of town a little later, but I got to the stadium pretty early, and I decided I would try to get down on the field and just take a lap around and see what I could see. Guys were warming up. It was pretty fun. I had a really fun I just basically was a wallflower. Like, I just thought, I'm just going to stand against the padding in the back of the end zone out of the sun, because it was a very hot night. And I just stood against the back and watching the kickers, watching some of the backup players, you know, get out like an early warm up in some people flipping the ball back and forth. And then Caleb came out with Roma Dunze, with DJ Moore, with Keenan Allen. And those guys went through a little warm up themselves. And I just, that was to me like a really fun moment for me to see and watch. And it just felt special. And I think that's kind of the one of the at least handful of moments, if not the top moment for me walking away, was this sense that these guys are sticking together. They seem to really get along. You know, they go out in this, they know they're not going to play, right? But they wanted to get out, get a little warm up in. They ran through some route tree stuff. You know, Caleb just got to get out and throw the ball, just kind of get the feel for it. And so I really locked into that. That was a lot of fun for me. It was kind of the big first memory. And then coming up and getting to see where we're at in the press box. And I think it was pretty cool. You know, you've been in the press box a few times, but, you know, I saw the list of names and, you know, here's the Brad Biggs and Colleen Kane, you know, they've got the Tribune people, and then they've got you and me, and then they've got the Sun-Times people, like Mark Potash and, you know, and then, you know, a little further down, our friend Nicholas Moriano. So it was just cool to be sitting on the same row as a lot of the writers that, you know, I've engaged with some of them, you know them well from your past. But, you know, kind of a who's who of covers this team was there and present at the Hall of Fame game.
What did you think about the guys who were up a row, two rows behind us, who were actually logging each play? And you really saw like the first draft of history being written, because they're up there and they're just saying this player off tackle or off guard ran this way, incomplete pass, complete pass, this number, this tackle, just getting every piece of information that fills a game log. And I didn't go and try to figure out who they were working for, but that's what they were doing. Constructing the game log, which I thought was a lot of fun. That's the sort of stuff that I like to see.
I thought they worked there. Like, I thought that's this, they were covering it for the PA for that, because they would say something and then the PA would say, he would announce it for all the reporters. And that was a PA, but like, or if it was just for the reporters,
could have been separate. It would have been all happening at the same time. Weider was next to us and he was also writing down all the logs, but I was just listening to those guys, because thinking like whatever they're doing, that is essentially what ends up in Pro Football Reference on a game log page or ESPN or NFL.com, wherever. So I love that stuff.
All right, so we walked down at halftime because we wanted to meet up with someone that you have worked with and help promote the cause. So talk a little bit about what we saw when we went down at halftime.
So we went down at halftime to meet my friend Ron Katz. And this is another person on this trip who I've gotten to know over the past few years. I've gotten to know you longer, but gotten to know these guys in this Hall of Fame group since COVID, probably. And Ron is a Broncos fan. He was the 2021 Broncos fan of the year with the affiliated with the NFL. And he has become known for his full court press, strategic and aesthetic advocacy for Randy Gradishar. So you will see him, I don't know what he plans to do now, but in the past, you would see him at any NFL event, at the Super Bowl, at the draft, at the Hall of Fame game, at Broncos games, generally wearing a homemade t-shirt that supported Randy Gradishar for the Hall of Fame. And he would wear these bright orange pants, sometimes an orange wig, and just be kind of this like big, you can't miss blaring symbol, you know, kind of, I mean, he would even say, you know, kind of like a caricature to get that visibility. But then behind the scenes, Ron knew every angle, every voter to talk to, you know, talked to the president of the Pro Football Hall of Fame, Jim Porter, sent him a letter asking to expand the senior class from 1 to 2 a year to a max of 3. You know, did a lot of advocacy at Gradishar events or making sure that cameras, local TV news, they knew what they should be asking him, trying to like spur on the Broncos and their organization to do that. So it was, talk about passion, talk about unending pursuit. I mean, he was kind of sacrificing himself visually and publicly for that end. And then it was a sensei strategist on the back end in private and really making a difference. And it just showed, you know, Randy Gradishar is someone who had really fallen through the cracks, and guys fall through the cracks for a variety of reasons, but generally in categories. And Gradishar was one of these short career guys, and it wasn't even that short, but it was deemed short because he retired when he was still, you know, could have still played. Like, he wasn't like ground into dust, but he had a great impact. He had a defensive player of the year. He was, you know, the star player on the 77 Broncos. A stat that Ron found and then brought to me and brought to our friend Paul to confirm was that the 77 Broncos were the only Super Bowl team through 2002 at that point who did not have a Hall of Famer. And that stat was something that then started really gaining traction. So it was really like seeing behind the scenes of what these modern day senior advocacy campaigns look like. And that was a very, obviously the most successful possible one. And Gradishar had his day, and that was really special to see. I think one thing that I would have been interested to know later was, what did like Freeney and Hester and Peppers in particular, because I saw those guys talking to Gradishar, what do they think? Like, he was the one senior who was there, and he's an absolute warrior, but he's a generation or two before. I would have just been curious to know what conversations were they having, because they were having conversations at the jacket ceremony, kind of walking around at different points. I just saw those guys talking with Gradishar, and that would have been interesting to know. So we went down to find Ron. Ron had a towel with Gradishar's image and some of his best statistics. Gave that to me. He was in his element, man. Ron was excited. He had been going super hard and doing a lot, and he had actually run into Gradishar on the way into town Thursday morning, flying in. They both had a connection at, I think, O'Hare. And Ron saw Gradishar and he said, I promise I'm not following you. He thought it's but then after that, Gradishar and all the inductees had private parties, and so Gradishar had a party, and Ron, however it happened, was invited, and two of our other friends, Paul and Kirk, who you know, were invited, so they got to speak with Gradishar, and Ron took a picture of him, of the two of them and his bust. So that was very cool to see.
Yeah, I mean, it's an interesting point that you make about the younger generation and, you know, interacting with him, and obviously McMichael wasn't there, but you have Hester and Andre,
Art Powell.
Right. Hester and Andre Johnson were, you know, they went to the University of Miami. So they have that connection and they were kind of traveling around together. And then you have Hester and Peppers who would have played together. So right. they would know each other. Right. So there's some connections between some of these Hall of Famers to begin with.
You also had Kevin Willis having chosen Mike Singletary to give him, to present him his gold jacket because Singletary had been his position coach. So a lot of Patrick Willis's time in the spotlight had a Bears twist to it. And he was talking in his speech about watching Walter Payton videos and like watching Mike Singletary and then learning from Singletary. So there was a lot of Bears going on.
Yeah, that's a good point too. So we go down and we're hanging out with Ron for a little bit. We see that it's going to rain. And, you know, so we're kind of talking about that. You make a quick stop to say hi to Jarrett Payton, who presented or introduced Steve McMichael at the ceremony. Just real quick, like, what's your background with Payton?
JP and I go back to 2010 when he had he was co-hosting a show, or it was his show, the Jarrett Payton Show, on the on Illinois Center for Broadcasting. They have a studio. I think they still have a studio, but they have a studio that is down at Harrison. I'm trying to remember, maybe Wabash and Harrison, and or State and Harrison. And so I would go there and guest host every Friday because Jarrett was in the music business. My brother was in the music business. They knew each other. And then JP and I started talking. And so I would go and do his show with his buddy Sean, who I got to know and still know, obviously, very well, and Brian and a bunch of people. So JP and I would do that show. And then when he went to CLTV, I would do guest spots with him. But, I mean, JP, anybody who's ever met Jarrett knows he is a hugger, he's a smiler, he is a high fiver, he's one of those legit. I've never heard anyone say a bad word about him, and I've never heard him say a bad word about anybody.
And also went to the University of Miami. So now you've got
another hurricane. Yeah, absolutely.
So we get out of there because it's gonna open up a downpour, and boy did it. That was one of the strongest storm cells that I have seen in quite a while. It feels like I was getting chased by storms getting out there, but I took this shuttle back to my car. This is a side story, but like I took this shuttle back to my car because they're shuttling people back and forth to the fairgrounds. And I got there just when it started to rain, but they dropped us off in a different entrance than what we came in on. And so I did not know where my car was. And
I was worried about that fairgrounds parking situation. Yeah,
There's no lights, and the storm is starting to break, and I'm running around this parking lot. I mean, there's not that many cars, but you know, I'm running around like hitting the key fob, trying to make my car make a sound.
Yeah.
Finally, I found like, okay, hey, I think this is where I can kind of visually see where I came in. Found my car, and then I think one of the most hectic drives I've ever had to the 15 minutes back north to my hotel. Like it was an absolute deluge. It was insane. So anyway, that they definitely canceled that. That game would not have been able to be played. It was insane.
And we should note that the last, what is it now? The last five Hall of Fame games that the Bears have played in, they've made the playoffs. Four before this. So 2018, trying to remember all the years. All right, 2018 was one of them. I think 2005 was one of them. I know that 77 was one of them.
Well, I was going to say that the last time that they were in the game was 2018. That was, right, of course, with the Brian Urlacher induction against the Ravens, where Ray Lewis was inducted. So that's why they picked those two teams. And so you have this 5 years, 6 years of very interesting Hall of Fame history with the Bears, because you have Urlacher going in 18. You've got the two senior candidates, Ed Sprinkle and Jimbo Covert, in the 2020 class. And then you have the three Chicago Bears going in this class. So Bears have had quite a run. You mentioned the next day, you and I met up for lunch, and then we went to this press conference that we were able to go to. And these Hall of Famers were transported by a golf cart from their hotel down the street. into this to this building to conduct this press conference, and they did it in three waves. And so Hester was with the first wave with Steve McMichael's wife, Misty, representing him in that press conference. So we wanted to go to that one.
And Andre Johnson was in that first one as well.
And Andre Johnson, yes. Yeah. So as we're driving up, I noticed there were like 50 people that were like camped out in like lawn chairs outside of the hotel. And I'm like, what is happening? And I think we figured out that like this is where the players are staying, and a lot of the other Hall of Famers, I think, may have been staying there too. And they just, I think, were hanging out just on the off chance that a Hall of Famer would walk out and say hi. Like, I think that was literally what the activity was for a lot of these guys that were just hanging out there. So I thought that was like kind of part of the atmosphere of what was happening.
That happened. And if you remember, that happened in the museum as well, because the Saturday morning, they were bringing Hall of Famers into the museum, into a private meeting room. And there were just crowds of people. It was during a rain delay, but it would have been happening anyways. But there were crowds of people inside the museum who all they were doing for a long period of time was just they would be lined up next to a doorway waiting for someone to come through. So there was also a lot of that inside and out.
Yes. And just cheering anybody with a gold jacket. And sometimes cheering people that were just working there, you know, because they were, I think, kind of being funny. But so we get to this press event. And again, I'm not a seasoned reporter. I have not been to a lot of press events. But lesson learned, if you want to get a good spot at something like this, you need to get there more than a half an hour before it starts, like we did, because there were already, 40 cameras set up in the scrum, and just this semicircle that was pretty much three deep that we could not get, really could not penetrate. And so, you know, lesson learned, you need to get there earlier than that. But that was a pretty insane situation. I don't think I expected it to be such a small venue and then to be so dominated by video cameras like that.
It was an odd little place for it to be. And I think it carries with a good portion of my overall feedback, which is that what a strange relationship between the town of Canton, Ohio, and this multi-billion dollar global juggernaut that is the NFL, and the gap between where this league was, you know, in 1920 and then where this league was in 1963 or 62, and it run up to Hall going to Canton, and then where the league is now, it's incredible. I was staying in Massillon. Massillon had the team, the Tigers, one of the inaugural teams, to this day, a huge rival, the rival with the Canton Bulldogs. We were in the Buffalo Wild Wings in Massillon, and our waitress was telling us like, yeah, Canton's all right, but like, we've won the last five games, and I know you guys are going to the Hall of Fame, but like, we just, yeah, come see some Massillon Tigers and all this. I mean, it was really real. I really thought that like the city would be popping a little bit more. When I left the gold jacket, when we left the gold jacket ceremony, and I kind of hung around looking for like, where's the party at? Like, where are the Bears fans who are going to be? I was picturing like, you know, the headlines when we went down to Tennessee in 2012 about how Bears fans drank Nashville out of beer. I was kind of picturing like that was going to be a little bit more of the vibe. And I drove around after that and it was like pretty quiet. So the fact that they had this massive press obligation held in this fairly small historic like newspaper building was fitting, even if it was jarring.
At Kroger Pharmacy, Care is making it easy to get vaccinated. Care is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. Care is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply. At Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
I did want to say, we'll talk about the gold jacket ceremony in a minute and me seeing Rod Marinelli, but you earlier in the day got to meet Rod Marinelli. So I want to make sure that you have some space to share your Rod Marinelli story.
I was in the museum and I saw Coach Marinelli. I mean, he's just one of those faces. There is no mistaking him for anybody else or anybody else for him. And so I introduced myself. I said, hi, I'm a Bears fan. I'm a Bears historian. Just thank you so much for your contributions to the team. And oh, it's cool. Oh yeah. Wow. Thank you, young man. And all this. And he was there with his lovely wife, met her. And I mentioned that I had done some Hall of Fame work, like writing about these guys. And he said, have you written at all about Devin Hester, but just based on his stats? I was like, what kind of on the nose question is that? Like, yes, sir, I have done that. He was like, his wife was like, he wants to read them all. He was like, I do. And they gave me his number and he was like, text me all of your stories. I was like, this is a writer's dream come true. So I threw on my camera and I talked to him a little bit. I asked him about, you know, what did he notice first about Peppers when he started coaching them that wasn't necessarily on film or you hadn't necessarily read, just, you know, the things that you watch. It was sort of a little bit more broad. He just talked about his work ethic, but I asked him about Hester, about like a favorite Hester memory. And he was like, yeah, it was when he was running by me down the sideline for a touchdown. And I said, is it true that did you really tell your kicking team to kick it into Lake Michigan? And he said, yes, absolutely. And then he was like telling us about like the things that he and Jason Hansen and whoever their special teams coach was who had worked this out in 2007, and just none of it worked. And that was Devin. He talked about the way that he energized his teammates and demoralized his opponents. That's not an exact quote, I'm summarizing, but that's what he said. And that was exactly right. And in a weekend that was celebrating some of these surprise or long journeys to Canton, either long or, you know, Hester went pretty fast, but we didn't know, you know, you never totally knew. I mean, trends wise, first ballot finalist is going to get in 6 years, but you know, it could be another 3 years. So there was a lot of feeling of like, wow, so-and-so really made it. Randy Gratishar, Steve McMichael, and Devin Hester was one of those. And to see even Rod Marinelli talk about what he meant to his teammates and what he meant and what he did to his opponents really summarized, I thought, a lot about what makes someone a Hall of Famer. I mean, I thought about how when we were watching the Green Jacket ceremony, the difference between being able to just introduce a guy based on his best stat versus just based on his, you know, personality and the experience of watching him, or just a series of adjectives and superlatives. Although hearing Dan Fouts say this offensive tackle in 10, 11 years, whatever, only allowed 2 holding penalties, Ron Mix, my jaw was on the floor when I heard that. I was not aware of that.
So you mentioned the gold jacket ceremony. So when I pulled up, now I'm dressed to the nines. I'll admit, I wasn't sure what we were doing there.
You were dressed to the eights.
I was pretty, that's pretty good. Like, I mean, it was pretty good.
You look sharp.
I thought that I wasn't sure what we were going to do. There was a good chance that we weren't really doing anything, but I thought there was this at least small chance that we might, this might be a little bit more intimate. I didn't really understand what the ceremony
was. I didn't either.
Yeah.
And even when I called you, when I was looking for parking, you were like, I think we're just going to watch people eat.
It was, yeah, it didn't make any sense to me when I was looking at, but I get there and I'm basically shoved in this, adjacent to a Wendy's restaurant is a gravel parking lot. And I'm basically like motioned in there. It cost me $20 to park and I'm kind of irritated, but like, whatever. I'm like right there. I can't really turn around at this point. So I back my car in, I get in this, the guy I had parked next to, you know, we're kind of, he's waiting to open his door. Right. And I get out and I'm like, oh, that's Rod Marinelli. So I parked next to Rod Marinelli and I was going to say something to him like, hey, you know, just talk to my friend Jack. And so I'm getting ready to do that. And I realized that he is meeting Lovey Smith. And I was like, oh, there we go. And so I totally wanted to like break in and like, hey, how's it going? But they're with their families. You know, they're clearly having a good time, but we are all kind of walking in the same direction. And I really want to ask Lovey Smith about being on the sideline for Devin Hester's first return touchdown and his final return touchdown as an opposing coach.
Right.
Really wanted to ask him that question. I wanted to ask him about, you know, being the head coach on that Texans game that really changed the fortunes of not only the Texans and I think for the better, but also for the Bears and what crescendoed into Caleb Williams. But again, I can't really do that. You know, he's with a group of people and, you know, whatever. So I just said, hey, coach, just want to say thanks for all the great memories. And he gave me a very nice response. And then I just went in. We get into this gold jacket ceremony. And for the first, I don't know, Jack, 90 minutes, I think we're just watching people eat.
We were.
And I'm not quite sure what we're doing.
You almost left. I'm so glad you didn't leave.
I was hungry. And sometimes when I'm hungry, I make irrational decisions, but I did not know what we were doing. There was at no point did I know that Rich Eisen was about to come out on stage.
It wasn't clear.
It was not clear. So Rich Eisen came out and now it's on. Now it's different. Cause at first there was like a representative of the beef council and he talked for like 10 minutes about certified Angus beef. Like I wasn't sure what was happening here. I will be honest with you. I was kind of wanting some of that certified Angus beef that they were serving down below, but you know, like you settled for a
bag of beef jerky,
certified Angus beef jerky, that had, you know, like a trail mix that had that in there. So then it's a gold jacket ceremony. Okay. It's a little more serious. The thing that I think both of us were kind of wowed by was the introduction of all of these older Hall of Famers that were present. They made the trip and they were introduced and came out onto the stage. So what was going through your mind when you started seeing all these Hall of Famers come out?
I was stunned. I was stunned to be in a room with everybody. I was stunned to hear their names. You know, I get excited when I see any retired athlete like whose game I enjoyed, but there's something obviously so much different about the people who are coming out, who are the best at what they did. Some of whom are the best of all time. I mean, Deion Sanders is there. Best corner of all time. The QBs, Fouts and Warren Moon, the running backs, the number of running backs who were out there was crazy. Emmett, Curtis Martin, Thurman, Dorsett, the Bus,
Dickerson,
Marshall Faulk, Dickerson. They had, Stallworth, Swan, Michael Irvin, James Lofton, Andre Reed, Isaac Bruce, Calvin Johnson. It was, I mean, every position group was loaded. Paul Krause, the NFL's all-time leader in interceptions. Emmitt Smith, the NFL's all-time leading rusher. John Randall, you know, most sacks, I think, still for a defensive tackle. Morton Anderson, the NFL's all-time leading scorer until Vinatieri. Jan Stenerud, the first Hall of Famer, the only Hall of Famer other than Hester to be elected to get to the finals and to do it on the first ballot. He was elected first ballot in 1991. Derrick Brooks, Warren Sapp, Bryant Young. It was really awe-inspiring. And of course, we had the Bears in the house. Richard Dent was there. Jimbo Covert was there. And Mike Singletary was there. Edgerrin James, and that was another big one because Hester passed him. So what the scene is that during this dinner, there is a stage in the middle of the floor, and there are two rows on either side of the stage jutting out all the way down the length of the room, and it's two rows of chairs facing each other. All of these Hall of Famers come out, introduced by Dan Fouts, Anthony Munoz, Dwight Stevenson, Jerry Kramer, Carl Eller, Mean Joe Green. Come on, man. That's crazy. That's not even a real person. So I was like, this is incredible. So yeah, they come out and they fill out these seats so that when the new Hall of Famers get their gold jacket, the way that they do it, the last thing that they do on this earth before the first time putting on a gold jacket, although I guess they kind of like jumped the gun a little bit with all those like unboxing videos that they were posting. Yeah. Like the guys like all had their jacket before, but I'm pretty sure this was actually Gradishar in his video, I think, put his on. In any case,
I'm sure they put it on to make sure it fits, right?
To make sure it fits, yeah. But the symbolic, you know, the symbolic element, the visualization of seeing these players who are the absolute legends walk in between all these legends and basically get welcomed to the group was really, really special. And Devin is absolutely one of the guys. I mean, you saw all the Lubby guys there, and they all had, you know, such a wonderful time together, and so many of them were in the house to greet Devin, their brother, and they played together and teammates and all that stuff. But Devin also belongs to this different group of, you know, iconic masterpiece players in NFL history. I mean, even like an inner group tighter than just even Hall of Famer. I mean, Devin is in a very exclusive group. When there was a hallway in the Hall of Fame Museum that had paintings, maybe life size, of a bunch of players: Peyton Manning, Ray Lewis, Joe Montana, Walter Payton, Mean Joe Green, Deacon Jones, Night Train Lane, Sammy Baugh, Munoz is in there. I might be missing Reggie White.
Red Grange.
Red Grange is the last one. And you could put Devin in that group and it wouldn't be out of line because of what he did at his position, what he meant, the combination of statistical brilliance, you know, visual brilliance, the impact plays, the fact that you could say, like, what is your favorite Devin Hester play, and talk to five people and they might have five different plays other than, like, everyone would have the Super Bowl and then go from there. So to see Devin walk through this group, that got me really emotional as well, specifically more than any of the other players, because Devin came in and it wasn't clear what exactly he was good. It was like, well, he can return kicks and what else is he going to do? And eventually, you know, we give the Bears a lot of hell for different decisions that they've made where they really blew the pooch generationally. And I got to give the Bears a lot of credit for having, through multiple staffs, but really one big staff, the Lovey Angelo group, but a lot of different people in the scouting department, a lot of different people who had touch points on this, but the Bears as an organization saw, you can take this guy. We're coming off a division title and we've got everybody coming back. We can take this guy in the second round. It's going to feel high, but it's going to feel like if you don't and he drops to the third round, you're never going to sleep at night. And they had the foresight to do that and then to try to work him into the offense. And then at a certain point to say, you know what? He's good on the offense. We think maybe it's detracting from his return game, which is more than generational. I mean, it's transcendent. And the Bears said, you know what? Let's just let him do the things that he does the best. And let's go out and get Brandon Marshall and draft Alshon Jeffrey in the same year so that there's not even any question about where Devin is on the receiver board, because he should just be returning kicks. That's like what he was put on earth to do. So the fact that you got to see him get embraced by all of these legends, that was a different kind of feeling that I wasn't totally prepared for.
Yeah, it's interesting. Earlier in the day on that press conference, I mentioned, you know, he expressed that he was frustrated in his career because he feels like, although he left a lot on the field, he felt like he left a few plays or many plays that he didn't get to make, because through his whole playing career, he was athlete and he played all sides of football. He would play defense, he'd play offense, he'd play special teams in high school. Same thing in college in Miami. He'd play on offense, he'd play on defense, he'd play special teams. And so he didn't think that was that much of a stretch for him to do that in the pros. And he felt like maybe he wasn't given the opportunities and wasn't put in the best position to produce like he believed he could on offense and on defense, but at least he was so talented that he could make that impact on special teams. So, and it was so much that he was able to make the Hall of Fame based on being that incredibly special player, just on the special teams part of it. But I thought it was interesting that he still thinks about it with, I think, some level of longing, some level of regret that he wasn't able to show what he thought he could do on the other sides of the ball.
Right. Yeah, that was interesting. I don't know if anyone has written about that or if that was a quote that really made the rounds, but that was definitely one that stood out when you were actually there in the room.
I think that maybe the gold jacket ceremony, and I know that they televised it. I just don't know that people are watching that as much as they're watching the main the bronze bus ceremony on Saturday. But that felt a little more intimate to me. Mm-hmm. And it was many fewer people that were at that event than were at the Saturday event. But just big picture, kind of stepping back as a historian, because I think everybody's kind of, you know, they've seen the rest of it. They kind of know what the rest of the weekend is. But for you, experiencing this as a historian, as someone who has put a lot of time and effort into thinking about the Hall of Fame and who hadn't been physically to the Hall of Fame for a while. So this was your first time back there for a number of years, and meeting some of the people that you have worked on some of these projects with and having that shared experience with them, shared experience with me, who you write about this team about and have worked on history projects with, like, just, I don't know, big picture, like what's your kind of 2-3 takeaways from experiencing this weekend?
I think the first is that they kept hammering those numbers of what number each person was in Canton. The last one of the group, Patrick Willis, was 378. It just goes in alphabetical order. McMichael, funny enough, was 376. So that was fitting. But the fact that they talked about that number, 378, and I know that people like to say, you know, Dion had been saying we need upper hall, lower hall, or that people will say the bar is low. The Pro Football Hall of Fame bar is so high. It is, and no disrespect to any other Hall of Fame, but it is really hard to get into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. Really, really hard, even now. And that stood out to me, along with kind of the opposite end of the spectrum, which is that, you know, we all tried to be professional athletes. We all did. Like, every one of us is a failed athlete. Like, every kid, you know, there are people who read me who will be like, oh, I like that writing, but they weren't like growing up being like, I'm going to be a writer. And I didn't grow up thinking, oh, I'm going to be an actor, or I'm going to be president or whatever. But every kid grows up being like, oh, well, I play sports and I'm going to be good at it. And then at some point you're eliminated, you know, elementary school, middle school. But to think that you're one of 378 of the greatest people to ever do a thing that every American kid tries to do. That were all failed football players and basketball players and baseball players. And these guys are the greatest of the greatest of the greatest of the greatest of the greatest to do a thing. Like, that is so cool. And, you know, all of the guys who aren't Hall of Famers who just have made the NFL, holy shit. I mean, they are the greatest of the greatest too. So the fact that then there's this next group, 378 Hall of Famers, and the fact that Devin is one, that just put a lot in perspective, I thought, for me. And that was very special. The other big thing that I loved in the museum from a purely historical standpoint was being able to see the pre-color television, color photo jerseys. Because the Bears had bright orange jerseys in a variety of versions in the 20s, 30s, and 40s. So the orange jerseys that we wear, they're not direct throwbacks. They're an homage. They're a tribute to this variety of orange jerseys that we wore. But they don't show up in any of the clips or in any of the papers. You just can't. They're just dark. So to see like George Musso's bright ass orange Bears jersey, and to imagine like going to Wrigley Field and seeing the Bears take on the Packers and the Bears are in these bright old orange jerseys, that was really cool. And you get close enough that you could really see the fabric, and it was specialized enough that, so in the museum they would have these like 20 minute long sessions, presentations of different aspects in the hall. And so I went to one called like Artifacts of Pro Football. And one of the historians from the hall brought out this pair of cleats that were from the movie Leatherheads, the George Clooney movie that he made, I think in like 2008, based on 1925 early NFL. I think old boy from The Office plays like a Red Grange type. And yeah. And the historian was saying it was amazing to watch these teams, these costume teams from Hollywood, or this one costume team, you know, come in and like study all of our archives and all of our files to then recreate these costumes. And he was like, they looked perfect. He said the only thing that was different was that they just couldn't find the same material. So to be able to then look and see that material and get a sense of like, wow, this is, you can't, I'm not going to sit here and pretend to know exactly what fabric they were talking about, but you could really see it through the glass, like in these display cases. So with like Sid Luckman's jersey, Bronco Nagurski's jersey, George Musso's jersey, or Bob Waterfield's jersey, that was really cool to see the difference in the helmets over the years, the difference in the shoes over the years. You know, that stuff I love. And tons of photos of people, and you know, this is the jersey that so-and-so wore in this game, and these are the cleats that so-and-so wore in this game, and all that stuff I loved the little oddity that the largest Pro Football Hall of Fame ring that they've ever made is a size 19 and a half, and it was for Bronco Nagurski. And the largest Super Bowl ring that they've ever made was a size 23, and it was for the fridge. So we have the fat finger record in pro football history. And they contextualized it, which was that the average man's ring is a size 10. And they let me put my wedding ring inside Bronco Nagurski's Pro Football Hall of Fame ring. And that was really cool. Any sort of artifact where you're like really touching history is very, very neat. So I enjoyed that for sure. Just a lot there. The museum is great. And boy, did we ever get our fill of it, because we got trapped there during the rain. And when everyone was watching and waiting for the ceremony to start, Jeff and I had already gone into the museum. And so we were in there when this rain came down on Saturday, and then everyone who was outside started coming into the museum, and it was packed in there.
Yeah, and I think one thing that kind of sticks out to me, and we're kind of in here, but one thing that really stuck out to me was there were fans of teams that weren't that didn't have any presence in the Hall of Fame that were wearing their gear and showed up and they wanted to be part of this. And so this idea that, I mean, there was a lot of Bears fans, but it wasn't just Bears fans and Niners fans for Willis and Texans fans. There are plenty of Texans fans. They showed out. They definitely showed out for Andre Johnson, but it wasn't just fans of the teams of the players that were going in. There are plenty of people that were wearing their gear and they were just there. And I had a conversation with the gentleman that was wearing a Randall Cunningham jersey for the Eagles.
Wait, you have to tell that story.
Yeah. Yeah. And so I'm having a conversation with him because his wife is wearing a t-shirt, a Dallas Cowboys t-shirt. And so I looked at them and I say, hey, how's this work? This doesn't make sense to me. And so we were just chatting for quite a while. And this guy comes over, he shows his phone to me and the guy wearing the Randall Cunningham jersey. And he starts playing a video of Randall Cunningham. And Randall Cunningham says, hey man, thank you for showing up to the Hall of Fame with my jersey on. Love the support, you know, just kind of going on and on. And this guy is looking at this video and he has the most confused look on his face. Like, and the video stops and he looks at the guy who's holding the phone and he goes, was that to me? And the guy had no setup. He just started showing this video and he goes, yeah, I work for the Eagles and I actually work with the legends of the Eagles. And so I know I have Randall's number. I took a picture of you wearing this jersey and I sent it to him. And he recorded this video and he sent it to me. So give me your number and I will send you this. I'll forward you on this video. And this guy was like, are you kidding me? Like, what is, like, he was floored. And I had been talking to this guy and his wife for probably 15, 20 minutes at that point. It was, you know, just very nice conversation. It was just out of nowhere. And so you just never know who's around. Like, you know, you just randomly run into Rod Marinelli and Rod Marinelli, oh, you're a writer for the Bears. Did you happen to ever write anything about Devin Hester's stats? Because I'm really interested in that.
You're the guy to
talk to about that. Like, you know, you just never know what you're going to be around. And that was probably one of the bookends for me. Like the seeing Caleb Williams with the receivers and that on field and sort of that experience. And then here's these two fans who decided to come to this that have. There's no Cowboys or Eagles going in. Like, that doesn't, they're not motivated by that. They love football. And they showed up and guy wore his Randall Cunningham jersey because he loves Randall Cunningham, believes he should be in the Hall of Fame. And somebody who works for the Eagles sees it. And all of a sudden now you've got this really cool, amazing memory for this guy whose favorite player just recorded a little video for him. So I love that kind of stuff. I love what football does to bring people together. Like I know we get a little tribal sometimes, like, you know, hey, this is my team. And if, you know, you root for a different team, it's us against the world. I don't really love that. Like I get that. I cheer for a team that wears navy and orange and that's my team and that's great, but I'm happy to have a conversation with somebody who roots for a completely different team. I don't care if it's the Jaguars. I don't care if it's the Seahawks or anybody in between. Like I'm all for having a conversation with somebody of like, why are you a fan of this team? What got you into them? You know, what do you think they're going to do this year? That's what I talk about at national conferences with people, right? If they're a football fan, I'm going to talk to them about their team. And the Pro Football Hall of Fame, particularly on this weekend, just seemed to be a really great opportunity. The stakes are low. There's like, no one's upset about the game that's happening or anything like that. Everybody just wants to kind of bask around the good vibes of football. And that's what I was feeling throughout the weekend at the Hall of Fame, was just the good vibes of football that bring to so many of us.
Yep. Well said. Absolutely. It was a good time seeing the Lovey. It was a good time seeing the Lovey guys. So after Devin's speech, I went down from the press box and I went down into the seating area and got to just see a lot of guys who I hadn't seen in a while. It had been a while since I'd seen Peanut. It had been a long while since I'd seen Hunter Hillenmeyer. saw Pat Manley, saw Jerry Zuma, Johnny Knox, Izzy. Hadn't seen Izzy was like, your hair. Because I had seen him when I was on the Bears beat, was right at the end of having a buzz cut. He was like, what in the world? So saw him. That was great. Who else? Rashid, who I hadn't seen in a long time. Tommy Harris was out there. Lovey, I talked to 3 times, and he was awesome. And he just looked like, if you could bottle like Lovey's inner vibes and the manifestation of those vibes out, like he was in, you know, he just his bright white beard, and he looked casual and comfortable in his suit. But then on Saturday when he was wearing like, I don't know, I'm bad at describing clothes, but he looked very relaxed. He just looked like so happy, so proud. 2 of his players going in the hall. All of his former players are all great friends. And he just, he was there with his wife. And I said to him, because I had done a profile on his son when I worked at the legal newspaper at Chicago Daily Law Bulletin, and his son had gone to Loyola Law School and was was Lovey's agent. So I profiled him because I had a series on interesting attorneys. So I said to Lovey, I was like, hey, I'm Jack Silverstein. I wrote about Matt. And he was like, oh yeah, yeah. And I just said, I was like, what a day, huh? He was just like, what a day. What, how about this? And then when Devin got his jacket, I ran over and I went, coach, you did it. And he was just smiling. So that was good to see all of those guys together and knowing all the battles that they went through, and just the fact that they have all come out the other side, friends, and I know their families all get together. Everyone's relatively healthy. And I just think we didn't win a Super Bowl in 06 or with the Lovey crew, but man, they gave us everything they could possibly give us. And I just always appreciate that, and appreciate getting to know those guys, and love seeing what fun that they all have.
Good place to end it. Jack, thank you so much for all of your help on this series. And thank you so much for helping me enjoy a good time in Canton, Ohio, and seeing our Chicago Bears list of Hall of Famers grow.
That's right. It was awesome. Thanks, Jeff.
All right. That's Bronze Bears. Thank you so much for listening all the way through and for listening through all of the episodes of this podcast series. I hope it was worthwhile, and I again appreciate all of you that have reached out to say nice things about it. Maybe we'll visit this down the road and look back at the dozens of Bears that are already in the Hall of Fame. But until then, I'm switching my attention to the current era of Chicago Bears football, so let's all turn that page together and look forward to what's next.
Kroger Pharmacy, CARE is making it easy to get vaccinated. CARE is helping you stay protected from flu, COVID, and RSV. Seasonal vaccines are available 7 days a week with evening hours. CARE is giving you a shot at staying healthy this season. Walk in whenever is best and get multiple vaccines in one visit at your local Kroger Pharmacy. So come and get the protection you need while protecting those around you. Kroger Health, a world of care, is in store. Visit Kroger.com/vaccines for more. Restrictions and exclusions apply. See site for details.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.